text reading from...
It should pick up. It will pick up just fine. I just want to make sure right from the get-go.
Okay,
David.
Thank you. Can you hear me? That reading from Matthew is one of the most frightening things I remember reading when I was a child. Just, I would imagine myself when I'd hear that at church, that I was one of those people who was lined up to be judged. And when I looked around, I would imagine looking around me, and I'd see that every single person was surprised. The people who were admitted into heaven were confused. What had they done to deserve that? And much more frightening to me when I would hear this at Sunday school were the ones being condemned, were every bit as surprised by their fate. They did not know what they had done wrong, what they had not done. But every single one of them was surprised. I want to tell you about the biggest surprise of my life. Nothing, I can assure you, as momentous as the great surprise of damnation or salvation, but a surprise for me. I was lost. I'd graduated from university. I was unemployed. I was uncertain what I was going to do next. And a family friend gave me this advice. He said, David, you've got your life ahead of you to find a job in Canada. What you need to do is apply to be a volunteer at a project for street children in Costa Rica in Central America called Pueblito. So I thought, okay, I'll try that. And I got such a surprise that changed my life forever. Well, I actually got two surprises, because the person who interviewed me for that volunteer position was Elizabeth, and that's how we met. And so being introduced to my wife in a job interview was a wonderful surprise. But the other surprise was this. When I left Canada, I expected to find children whose spirit had been squeezed out of them, children who would be unable to find any joy in life because of the hardships that they had faced in Dickensian orphanages or through life on the streets. I thought I would be there to help those children. But to my surprise, I found instead lively, engaging, warm, and wise children, children who captured my heart and who helped me learn. They were children like Giovanni. Before I'd met him, Giovanni cared for his younger brother and sister, Marco and Maria, on the city streets in San Jose. They would beg, they would scrounge, they'd do whatever it took just to get enough food and to stay alive. And Giovanni learned a lot of things on the streets, and one of them he tried to teach to me, which was how to pick pockets. We'd be doing some work. We'd be sitting at, there was a bench about this high. I'd be sitting here, Giovanni would be there. And suddenly, I wore a jacket like this, because it's cold in the mountains in Costa Rica. But suddenly, my wallet would be in his hand. David, he would chide me. You have to keep an eye on your things. You never know who you're going to run into around here. He tried hard to get my skill level up to his, but my fingers were never as nimble. And of course, I'd never had to do that to survive. One day I asked him, Giovanni, what was it like to sleep on the streets? This time, he didn't laugh. He didn't smile. His voice grew hard as he said to me, David, I did not sleep on the streets. And Marco and Maria didn't either. Every night, I'd go to the garbage, I'd find newspapers. I'd spread those papers out on the benches in the parks, and they would be the sheets of our beds, because nobody was ever going to say that Giovanni Nunez could not give a bed to his brother and sister when they needed it most. Nobody. Those newspapers, that bench, that's how Giovanni was able to hang on to some dignity while keeping his family alive. You know, we say children are resilient, and we know it's true. And those remarkable children at Pueblito proved that many, many times over. But I began to wonder, why? Why, in a world with enough food, with enough material wealth to provide a decent life for every single person on the planet, why must anyone have to live in such horrific circumstances that they're forced to display such resilience? This is the height of injustice. Giovanni and his strength and the other children became an inspiration for me. And what was going to be a couple of months learning before coming back to take a job here turned into a career path. And it sounds a bit, I don't know, corny, I think. But all I wanted to do was learn more from those children, to help those kids, and do what I could to stop other children from having to face those challenges and display that level of resilience. And what was going to be a short volunteer interlude turned into a career in international cooperation. And that has been a great, great blessing, as I've been able to work with remarkable community leaders all around the world who are striving to build a better community and a more just world. I was trying to think how to share with you a sense of this, and I thought what I'd do was turn to the last trip I made to Africa, to Kenya, when I was there a while ago with UNICEF. And if you will indulge me, I'm just going to read from notes that I wrote while I was there. They say that Kibera is the largest slum in Africa. I hate that word, slum. It connotes nothing but violence, despair, and poverty. And while that exists in Kibera, there's also vibrancy, community, hard work, and a social network that's improving people's health. To get to Kibera, you turn off from a four-lane road onto a narrow, winding lane that's not much wider than your vehicle. And there you are, the streets filled with pedestrians and lined with little stores. This one sells mobile phone time, and the one right next door is selling small buckets of charcoal for cooking. A herd of cows makes its way across a playing field. Laura, one of our health promoters, tells me that Maasai herders have started to bring their cattle into Nairobi since their regular grazing lands have been parched by drought. I haven't been in Kibera for 15 years, and I'm interested to see how community health programs have changed. 15 years ago, the idea of community health workers was just getting started, a new concept. Now, they're an established part of the Kenyan health system, and they're making a difference. As we stand amidst the noise of Kibera, Laura explains, an act of parliament established the system. We have one community health volunteer for every 100 households. The volunteer is from here and makes regular visits to their households, with health advice and the authority to make referrals to health centers if they suspect something's going wrong. These people have received basic training in first aid, in life skills, in water and sanitation, and we pay them $45 a month to do this work. One of the volunteers, a young man named Constant, leads us down the narrow walkways of Kibera, navigating around open sewers, chickens, cats, people doing laundry, and children scampering and playing until we reach the modest home of Susan. We duck in through the low, low door and sit on some sacks. Constant goes over some prenatal reminders with Susan and reminds her about her next checkup. We keep monitoring our clients and advising them about things like regular immunization, exclusive breastfeeding through the first 6 months, Constant says. We give them a book which describes the milestones in a baby's life, and we give advice about toys and things a child will need, like you can take a plastic bottle, fill it with stones, and then you've got a rattle. One of the things Constant mentions is deworming pills. With open sewers absolutely everywhere, deworming is necessary. Now, of course, ideally, sewers would be covered, drinking water would come to every house, but until that happens, deworming pills make a difference. And I guess that's what you have to do in a place like Kibera. Do the best you can. Recognize what is possible now in this situation. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And here's the thing. Programs like the community health volunteers and routine vaccinations and yes, even deworming are making a huge difference. Last month, Kenya's national health statistics were published, and they were really positive. Over the last 15 years, the number of children under 5 who die every year in Kibera has plummeted by 20%. 20%, that's fantastic. The infant mortality rate here in Kenya is now about the same as it was here in Canada when I was born. And the number of children suffering from chronic malnutrition has fallen even more. Community health volunteers like Constant now are reaching almost 1 million households in Kenya every year. And that's a big reason for this improvement in child health. What has happened in Kibera and Kenya has been happening all over the world. The world has been getting better and better, and the statistics speak for themselves. By the year 2020, which is the last year that we have reliable statistics, fewer children were dying from preventable causes than at any other time in human history. More children had access to safe drinking water than ever before. The proportion of undernourished children was half of what it was in 1990. By 2020, more children were going to school than at any time in human history, both the actual numbers and as a percentage of the population. Here's a wonderful surprise for us all. We have been living through a child survival revolution that's been going on for 60 years, and we never, ever seem to hear about it. Probably because bad news travels so much faster than good. And these good surprises, you know, they come in so many ways. There are positive clinical trials showing that a malaria vaccine is in reach, and malaria kills about 500,000 children a year. We're seeing the use of sustainable energy growing so that more and more villages, I was in Zimbabwe not long ago, and seeing villagers working with solar energy and LED lights so that the children could study at night. And all of this coming together has meant that the population growth of the world is declining. I remember many years ago, we were afraid of the population explosion that was going to be the end of us all. But now we see that in 15 or 20 years, the population of the world will start to decline. And that means that the strains that we all put on the human, on the global ecosystem, will also start to decline. But there's still so much to do. Because even though half as many children die from preventable causes today than did at the turn of this century, that's still 5 million children too many. And even though the number of people living in extreme poverty has plummeted in the last 3 decades, there are still almost 700 million people who live on less than $2 a day. And the threats we face from the impact of nationalist self-serving politics, from climate and conflict, they're daunting indeed. I don't want to make a political statement. This is not a place for politics. But when we see the wealthiest country in the world turning its back on the poorest people in the world, as we have seen in the last 2 weeks from the United States, as they dismantled the world's largest aid agency, well, I'll tell you, it means that the programs like the ones in Kibera are now losing the medicine that they would be using for treating patients. It means that HIV/AIDS clinics in Africa, some that I know through my work with Stephen Lewis Foundation, have had to shut their doors on people who've been receiving life-saving treatment. When we forget about the world's poor, then we may be in for a surprise. And when war means that clinics and hospitals and schools are targets of bombs, and when water sources become a target for war, how can people thrive? And when people are losing their homes to floods and fires, how can they rebuild? But then I think, you know, the child survival revolution that we've lived through shows what we can do as people. It shows that we've been able to save lives with fewer tools available to us over those 60 years than we have available to us today. It shows, I think, most of all, that when we decide to act, when we put our faith in action, as you had said, when we decide to reach out and make a positive difference in the world, things do change for the better. And it makes me think again about that great surprise that the people who were lined up in the parable that we heard. Because what the people who were condemned, what had they done? Nothing. Even though they'd seen others suffering, they'd done nothing. That's the lesson that I take from this reading. Not to turn away from the problems of the world, not to turn away when we see people hungry and in need, but to act, because our actions, be they in public health, be they in education, be they in civil rights, affordable housing, reconciliation, our actions make all the difference in building a better world. Amen.